The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Brought to you by Standard Life. Retirement specialists getting you ready for your second life.
With me is Daniel McConnell, who is editor of The Business Post, and Tabitha Monaghan, political reporter with the Irish Independent and Indo Daily presenter. And there is much to discuss, including Donald Trump's desire to annex, invade, steal, buy, whatever way he's going to approach it, Greenland, and reports of huge pay hikes heading for CEOs in the public sector. Before that, though, the one story that is across an awful lot of the media this morning is that of AI, specifically the AI created by Elon Musk, known as Grok, which is being used to create fake images of particularly women in sexually suggestive both clothing and positions, and that is then being shared on Elon Musk's social media platform X and being used to drive attention and engagement. Ministers are apparently, and the AI junior minister, or the junior minister with responsibility for AI, is going to be meeting with X to plead with them to do something about all of that. That's according to Tabitha Monaghan in today's Irish Independent. One assumes, Tabitha, the answer will be what it always is for from X, which is go away and don't bother us.
Well, that seemed to be the response when Niamh Smith initially wrote to them, which was on Wednesday. And obviously then it was covered in many of the papers and online that Niamh Smith had asked for a meeting with X, but she heard nothing back. And it took Niamh Smith writing to X again on Friday morning to follow up to say, hey, can we have a meeting? And then X got back then later on Friday. So I think even that response, according, you know, that it took so long to get this meeting and getting a response, I think shows where X is in this and shows what position they are on this. I think in the response to the minister was that, you know, we have taken a number of measures. We don't allow child sexual material online. And then we also saw that Grok is now limiting who can use this image editing tool. So it's only people who are subscribers to X. So a lot of people who are subscribing to X will have that blue tick now. The only way to have that blue tick is if you're a paid user of the platform.
So you can be a creepy weirdo, you just have to pay for the privilege.
Yes, but I suppose the significant part of that is that your name and your payment details are available to X on that. But I think by now the damage is done. You know, we've seen it. It's everywhere. The pictures are out there. I've seen some horrible pictures, really, like, just disturbing things. And sometimes you see these stories coming out. You're like, what is going on? Why can't we just get a handle of this in Ireland at EU level? And I know, obviously, with the minister with responsible for artificial intelligence wants to meet with X in the coming weeks. As she said herself, she would have hoped that it would have been this week. A lot more urgency, I think, is needed in relation to this. So we don't even know when this meeting is going to be. Niamh Smith said that she will write to them and continue to write to them until this meeting happens. Like, you're just kind of at a loss of what to say to this because it's just so disgusting.
Well, even if the meeting does happen, the tone from the top, Danny, is evident in relation to the site's owners' approach to this. Elon Musk saying, in response to a tweet saying, so what if Grok can put people in bikinis? So can Photoshop, so can millions of apps. And Elon Musk is saying, exactly. In another tweet, they've put up pictures of Keir Starmer in a bikini saying, look, Google's Gemini and OpenAI's ChatGPT will also generate images like this. And in essence, what Elon Musk is saying again and again and again is this is an attempt to censor free speech. It's like censoring a pen. If people choose to make these images, it is the people, not Grok, is the problem.
Yeah, and we've seen this before when, say, leading figures in politics and the media and entertainment were coming under, you know, like being trolled or coming under kind of viral kind of attacks. And because I had this with previous colleagues of mine who were subject to horrendous abuse online at various stages, and we've tried to interact as a company on their behalf with, you know, the tech companies, and basically we're told to F off. Like, I mean, like, this is, there's a very high threshold of free speech in America that doesn't equate to what we would normally have to submit ourselves in the printed media here. So this attitude of like to that, go away, leave us alone, we can do what we want, and it doesn't matter what damage we do, it doesn't matter what harm we cause and all the rest of it. Like, I am a free speech advocate, but you cannot stand over any of this. This is disgusting stuff. This is absolutely outrageous stuff. We would never get away with it in the print. Like, we'd be sued within a second. But yet, and I think the outrage that's articulated across the media is met with this kind of passivity from government, because they really can't do anything. I mean, Niamh Smith's frustration in terms of trying to get somewhere with X is just born out of the idea they can basically throw and are showing the two fingers to the government. Now, whether this needs to be escalated, that this comes from the Taoiseach's office or a higher office or, you know, a senior cabinet minister, would that make any material difference? Probably not. But it does go to show, like, Ireland's a very small player, albeit some of these companies are based here and have their headquarters, European headquarters here. We're a small player in this. Like, this would require a European Union or even an American administration kind of response if there was any tangible change likely to happen. But until then, you are going to continue to see Elon Musk and the other kind of defenders of this continue to say, lads, leave us alone. And this is the sort of the nanny state, or this is the sort of kind of woke people kind of getting up on their high horse. You cannot defend this. It's exploitation of children. It's disgusting.
But even if you take the children, I mean, obviously that is self-evidently disgusting, but that to some extent gets used as a fig leaf by Musk, because he's able to say, well, that is illegal, and if you're creating illegal content, the law can deal with you. But he knows that he has created an AI app and a social media platform where people are using it to effectively sexually exploit women by creating sexualized images on them at a whim. And his view is that's freedom of speech.
And the most discomforting thing for me is that Grok was the most downloaded app in the last 7 days. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's just you're getting into a very uncomfortable space where this is a charter for predatory behaviour, disgusting behaviour, all that kind of stuff. Like we've seen, you know, and I think Miriam McCallaghan is in the papers, you know, saying that she went to court on the use of her imagery, you know,
in advertising.
And she's saying these images are showing up again. So like this is a very deliberate strategy by malign actors, in my view, seeking to exploit the imagery for pretty disgusting, you know, malign intent. And as a lot of the experts in this field are saying, this is only the tip of the iceberg. You know, with AI advancing at such a rate and the capability of AI coming, like, we can see the positives, but we are now getting a real glimpse as to what the negatives of all this are. And I like, again, like we're saying, we're left with ministers sort of like, oh, what can we do? What can we do? Like, it's tricky. It's going to be very tricky.
But surely there has to be something, whether it is at an Irish level or at an EU level, there has to come a point where you say, we can't stand idly by and have people effectively, in image terms, undressed and put in sexual positions against their will and say, well, that's just the way life is now.
But that's the thing. There's two sides that are at fault here. It's the people who are requesting this of Grok in the first place that are asking this. And there was one thing, I think Adrian Weckler in the Irish Independent was reporting yesterday, that somebody asked for Cristiano Ronaldo's young daughter, who really is very young, definitely less than 10, I can't remember off the top of my head her age, you know, asking Grok to edit images of her. You're like, that's disgusting. So that individual who asked for that to happen, disgusting. But all well and good that AI is advancing so quickly. There's just morality here. Like, why are we allowing a tool, like you were saying, online that can do this? And we know that there's limitations to all kinds of artificial intelligence, AI bots, chatbots, whatever. That if you ask, you know, in relation to suicide, you know, how would you go about this? That there are protocols in place, or there's limitations in place, where any chatbot will not give you that information, and instead they will point you to a hotline in relation to mental health supports. Why can't we implement that to something like this as well? It just shouldn't be able to happen.
Particularly
in
the instance of Grok, where there is previous evidence of Elon Musk overtly and publicly, by his own description, altering its algorithm so that it became less left wing and, inter alia, more supportive of him publicly. If it can do that, it can't be that big a technical challenge to say, stop undressing people.
There is no doubt that it is not a technical challenge here at all. It is just how the individual or the people who are running Grok, who are able to control the algorithms, control how this tool works, that they have made a conscious decision to allow this to happen. And I thought, and I think Niamh Smith described it as window dressing, in that change in relation to the page users only being the ones able to use this editing image tool on Grok. You're able to make changes. You're just not willing to go all the way. And I think, again, like you were saying, Grok becoming the number one app, or the, like, just exponentially growing in the number of users, I think it's also very concerning for, like, as a society, you know, humanity, how are we allowing this to happen, that people went, actually, this is good advertising, I'm going to continue to engage with this.
And that's, I mean, Elon Musk again has said, he's claiming number one app in Finland, he's claiming number one app in the UK, he's claiming number one Google search is currently Grok. And in a recent tweet, he said, the Streisand effect in full flow. In other words, this is making money.
Mm. And that's what the questions we were asking from a Business Post perspective. Like, you know, there's noise around this, but like with the volume of downloads that are happening, is there a business upside on this? Is there money behind all of this? And is this why this is happening? Or is it a case that this, you know, he knows this is going to garner a lot of attention, a lot of, you know, in a perverse way, you know, like the controversy, is it good for business, essentially? And you could clearly think, we're going to see in a short while that there will be money moving on in relation to this, and there's an upside for Musk and all this. Like, you would have to think that, that this is part of all of it. I mean, I was just thinking, I have a 12-year-old daughter, and we've seen, like, there's apps, you know, that you can superimpose the background or whatever, like, or dress them up. I mean, this is good, innocent kind of fun. This is just really unsettling. And, like, you know, body image for young kids anyway is such a big issue. You know, teenagers, like, you're petrified about being abnormal or picked on or isolated, or, and you now are opening a Pandora's box of absolute pain when, and you know, girls in particular can be fucking little bitches, like, yeah, you know, on the phone. And like, parents at our age are going to such trouble to make sure that they don't get the phones too early, they're not being exposed to this. This is a nightmare for people like me when my kid is heading into teenage years.
Organisations like the Ruhama Women's Project will say that there is evidence now of people being able to, and actively doing it, taking private pictures, whether it's scraped off Facebook or taken just using your phone, and creating sexualized content of people they know, of neighbours, of community. I mean, whether or not it gets posted on social media, there is an undercurrent of this happening as a socialised norm.
Yeah.
We're seeing two examples of that in the papers today. So the Mail had a story that police in the north are investigating allegations of blackmail against a young GAA player. It was in a club in Portadown, and the club were warning parents to be more vigilant because this individual was being targeted and being threatened with these images, because we know it can be done, and the ease at which that these can be done. While I think you had the page open there earlier on from the Indo, Erica Corcoran, she had her Instagram. It's Catherine Feegan talking to Erica Corcoran, and her Instagram was flooded with messages from men. She didn't know where it was coming from, and then eventually she realised through talking to some of them that they thought that they were talking to her on a porn website, because somebody had taken a very innocent picture of her, and both images are in the Indo this morning. You can see it's just her taking a picture of herself in a dress. Somebody had edited it through whatever means, I don't know what tool it was, and then she ended up posting nude. That picture was posted on a porn website, and then men were talking to her, and she said, what is going on here? Now, it took her going to that porn website to say, this is copyright, and then they took it down. But like, that's disgusting behaviour. It's just disgusting.
And you see, on a different level, you see, say, celebrities and kind of other people having their profile scraped and, you know, imitated. Like, so the ownership of your identity, it's like the Wild West at the moment. And that's where, to you say, like, I mean, Erica Corcoran's, I found it quite profound in terms of just, you know, like you say, an innocent image posted up, as, you know, people do all the time. They get their phone, they look in the mirror, they take a picture, they post it as to what you're wearing, all that kind of stuff, to now be completely distorted, abused, and abused in a way that
it's worth clarifying for people who haven't seen it. It isn't just that this is like classical Photoshop where they are changing the image. There are people using Grok to change the clothes that the person is on, to animate what would otherwise be a still picture, and to pose the person in sexualized positions. Yeah. I mean, more exploitative you can't get.
You can't get.
What also struck me is that I've seen in the last year or two, maybe, that people my age and even older who have had children, who have made the conscious decision not to post pictures of them online, or if they do, it might be a picture of them holding their baby and maybe their face is covered by a love heart emoji or something like that. I remember seeing that and going, okay, people are just trying to be cautious and vigilant and whatever. I completely understand why they're doing that now, and I think they've been completely vindicated in their decisions relating to that, being ultra cautious. And I wouldn't be doing it either. I wouldn't be posting any pictures of my
children. I'm under strict instructions from my good lady. I'm not allowed to put any pictures of my children, and I get a serious rap on the knuckles any time.
But you understand why, especially with stuff like this.
Yeah.
Text saying, horrifying. This could be used to harass, blackmail people, particularly women, and destroy lives. And I mean, evidently that is already occurring. Another X stroke Grok, clearly a publisher, so apply the liabilities of publishing to X. That's at the crux of all of this, Danny, isn't it? And it always has been. If the Business Post or if the Independent or if News Talk published or discussed the kind of things that happen all the time in social media, we would all be immediately sued. Whereas they have always been able to claim, though they are publisher, they're really not, so don't come after them.
It is the big bugbear of me as an editor and of other people like that. There's a different rule that, like, we are so wrapped up in very heavy litigation and defamation laws, albeit there's changes coming to that law shortly, or we were told shortly. But like, the regime that we operate under is highly restrictive. we would argue in the newspaper industry, it's too restrictive. It's like the balance is not there. But we are not talking about doing any of this sort of stuff. They operate on a completely different, they're almost immune. And what's worse is that they aggregate and rob our copy all the time and make money off it. And yet don't have to submit themselves to the same rules of the land. So don't get me started on that. We could be here for a lot longer.
But if you go back 5 or 6 years ago, there was a bit of a drumbeat of pressure and you had fig leaves and lipstick. You had Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg making general noises about content moderation and all the rest of it. Presumably we're now at a point where if Ireland and on a bigger scale the EU actually tries to push back on this, it becomes international global culture war fodder and it gets wrapped up in economic negotiations and tariffs and everything else.
And we've seen that before. We've seen when the EU have come out and criticised Elon Musk or the platform for whatever they're doing, we see Elon Musk hitting back. You're absolutely right. And I remember when I started in journalism and I was a student and Mark Zuckerberg had come over to Ireland and he was meeting with ministers and that, and he was over in the Merrion Hotel. It was about 2019. I remember at that stage it was, is Facebook considered a publisher? And you kind of thought, well, yeah, I think you are. But so this argument has been happening for years and we still aren't on top of it. And look at the detrimental impact that is having on people's lives that we haven't been able to push this forward.
Sarah Wynne Williams' book on the inside of, like, gives a real insight as to the very deliberate exploitation and use of all of this. Like, if anyone has any doubt as to their methodology or their mindset in this, that book reveals it all.
She was the former public affairs director for Facebook, an Australian native, but there was one piece in that book that lived with me for months after reading it. She said that the algorithm, she claims that she had evidence that the algorithm at one point was using cookies to track if a preteen girl deleted a selfie.
Yes.
So that it could immediately follow up with offers of Botox and cosmetics and self-improvement.
Yeah, I heard that as well and I thought it was unbelievable.
Exploiting somebody's sense of lack of self-worth.
The cleverness of the algorithm that it can do that it can spot that somebody in that moment was feeling vulnerable about how they looked and they said, I am going to push so many ads of makeup, cosmetic surgery, clothes, everything, because in that moment we are going to capitalise on your vulnerability. Extraordinary.
So is there anything then that, because we saw the Australians take the brave step of banning social media for the under 16s. Now, as to how effective that has been, time will tell, because workarounds are fairly easy to come across. But do you think that there is anything that either domestically or beyond anybody can or will do about it?
I think so what can the state do and can the state implement, because we live in a digital world and the borders don't necessarily apply here. Are there practical steps? Again, talking to principals who I know, remember there was this controversy about the pouches going into schools and stuff. To my understanding, they work. They actually work because they have transformed the dynamic in schools. They're locked up from one end of the day. It has cut out all the messing of the WhatsApp or the Snapchat kind of bitching and kind of bullying, cuts out all of that kind of stuff while they're in school grounds. And it also, and from a teacher perspective, they also say it has transformed the dynamic in the classroom because people are not distracted and they're not constantly like twitching for the phone under the table. So I think that's a practical thing that can be done to try and at least keep the wolves from the door. I think as parents, we need to take control and take ownership that, like, I mean, all the evidence would say, do not give them a smartphone before 16. Like, I mean, we obviously, my daughters will be starting secondary school in September. We'll probably give her a brick phone or some sort of
But social pressures are hard in that context.
We are getting it left, right and centre. Left, right and centre because, and, on one level, do you want her to be the only one in the class not on it? To be honest with you, I'm okay if that's the case. but I get that pressure is real. And I remember there was a couple of years ago, there was a move... I can't remember, was it the soccer group or the Gaelic group or the class? Someone very young got a smartphone and there was a bit of not a backlash, but there was a bit of a pylon from the rest of the parents saying, can we step back from this? And first the parents did and it kind of kept it out, which I thought was really, really good. But from our side, I am petrified as to what's coming down the line for us. But we're resolute, my darling.
Well, imagine being a teenager in the modern context and trying to navigate all of this.
But I have sympathy for teachers, I have sympathy for principals, I have sympathies for, but I think a lot of it has to come from, we talk about this a lot, myself and my missus, we talk about how we're going to do this. Like even in terms of my 9-year-old boy, he's the only one who probably doesn't have a Switch or a Wii or something like that, and we feel, I'm kind of beginning to feel bad, but he has shown at times he can't handle the kind of the sensory sort of overload that you get from playing Minecraft or whatever else, and I'm just like, we're going to keep us back as far as we can, you know?
I'd love to see some of the education as well, like some like seminars in school and just talking to kids and like, lads, let's just be real here. This is exactly what's going on online and this is why we're telling you that it's not a good idea. Like, you know, you tell me, because obviously you have kids of that age now. I just think let's tell them and explain to them that it's not a good space. It is the Wild West. There is damaging content out there. And can we all just get on a level playing field here and all kind of come to some agreement that this is not good for our kids?
Texas says, it's not just Grok. All the AI platforms are used this way. If you want to get in touch, 53106 or 087-1400-106. We will move on. Front of your paper, the Irish Independent, Tabitha. Good news for CEOs across the public sector, most notably Kevin Backhurst, who could be knocking on the door of 400 grand if the wind goes in the right direction. They're all getting pay hikes.
They are. So semi-state bosses are in line for bumper pay rises. Some of these have been approved by ministers. So the likes of Dublin Bus, Ishka Éireann, etc. You mentioned Kevin Backhurst, the Director General of RTE. The RTE board have applied for a pay increase for Kevin Backhurst, so I don't think that's been approved yet. I think that's under consideration. So at the moment, his salary is €250,000.
His salary is €320,000 if you include cars.
Yes, baseline then. And that could go up then to €300,000. So we'll see where that goes. So I think what was being reported in the Indo today is the CEO of Dublin Bus, Billy Hahn. He is on €260,000 per year. That was in December. He was given that. Previously, he was €200,000. The CEO of the Irish National Stud was at €110,569, went up to €170,000, and that was a 53.7% increase.
Now, people may look at these numbers and say these are egregious amounts for anybody to be paid. Would I be right in saying that if you held a similar role in a private sector organisation, you would not only get paid more, you'd probably get paid a multiple?
Well, and that was the point that I was going to make after that, is that the state has to compete with the private sector. And we know that the private sector salaries, the offering for CEOs in private sector, are multiples of what that is. So yes, the state has to remain competitive, but I still think we're not out of the woods in terms of the narrative around value for money. We will always get that, even since the Leinster House bike shed, that will continue to happen, that the taxpayers want to know that we're getting value for money. You know, I suppose when it comes to RTE, whether or not Kevin Backhurst does get that pay increase or not, are people satisfied with the level of service coming from RTE that the Director General would get a salary like that? But like you said, they have to remain competitive or they will lose people, good people that we want at the top of these semi-state companies to run them, and they have to be competitive with salaries.
Well, on that competitive front, Danny, looking at the CEO of CIE, the new change will mean 225,000. Previous CEO was €190,000. When you're covering general business stories in the Business Post, would a CEO of a commensurate organisation in the private sector, a large transport infrastructure company, huge degree of responsibility, millions if not hundreds of millions in revenues and costs per annum, would they do it for 190 grand?
Not a chance. Not a chance. And I think this is a real legacy of the financial crash where, you know, like I remember, because I was the reporter, I was one of the reporters, bemoaning the semi-state bosses who were coining it, who were responsible for tipping the country over the precipice. And, you know, their terms and conditions, gold-plated pensions, all the rest of it. And there was definitely a backlash. There was a reining in of all of that, rightly so at the time. But we're 15 years on from the crash. We're in a different space. The country is growing. We need good people in, and I think, you know, a really good chief executive is worth their weight in gold, because they can set the environment, the culture in a place, can transform. And look at what David McRedmond has done in Unpost, for an example. I mean, he has transformed what was a sleepy enough kind of postal service into something that's much more dynamic. They've embraced the parcel issue. Yeah. They've looked at what they're doing with Unpost money, etc. They're looking to innovate.
But is McRedmond not proof of the counter-argument that it is possible to get people into state-owned companies without paying millions upon millions? Because he was private sector.
He was, but I would think that David McRedmond has a degree of public service in his mindset. But I think for the job that he has done, he was worth an awful lot more money than the, and he, they have, it's public that they have sought for a lot more money for him, or had sought a lot more money for him. I think the difficulty from a government perspective is that they're afraid, like, and this is where I think it gets into a wider discussion of how skewed the dynamic in Leinster House is, because the left are very noisy and very loud, and they're very anti-business. There's an anti-business streak that goes in here. We have to enable people to get on and do their jobs, make money, make the state money. A lot of these are commercial semi-states. A lot of them don't actually take taxpayers' money, because, and they return a dividend to the state. So therefore, can we, like, if they're going to do it, make money, and they're not costing the state any money, surely they should have the right to set a reasonable level of remuneration. Now, there's always a risk of excess.
There's also a significant challenge in terms of the different structures of pay in private and public sector. In the private sector, it lends itself much more easily towards performance benchmarking. Achieve this, we pay you Y. Very hard to do that in public sector.
And also as well, if you don't achieve, you get slung, you get slung out the door. I think, you know, where there's a lot of heat here, I'd say, is in the context of Kevin Backers, and not to personalise it, because I think Kevin has done a very good job since going in. But there are others who would say that reforms haven't happened quick enough. But it's also in the context, they've gotten a $725 million bailout as well. You know, like, it's not like Virgin Media News have gotten, or News Talk, or Bauer Media, or the Business Post, or the Indo have gotten a similar bailout. We haven't. So there is a kind of an inconsistency in relation to RTE, or there's a kind of an exception there in RTE. But I would think Kevin Backers, given what he's had to go in and do, given the amount of reforms that he's had to do, I mean, from day one, I felt he's been underpaid.
But do you remember the conversation around the Housing Czar when Brendan McDonagh was potentially going to be the new Housing Czar, and he was going to be keeping his salary as head of NAMA? Was it over 400,000? 435,000 euro. And at the time, that was one of the arguments from the opposition, that this was an extraordinary salary. But that was like, that's the crisis that Ireland is facing at the moment, is housing. And even at that level, people were not happy to give somebody who was going to be the boots on the ground person for the housing minister €430,000, regardless of whether or not he was going to help solve the housing crisis.
And Anton, just very quickly, Sean Sweeney was hired to lead the Metrolink project. And, you know, the government decided that he was worth the £500,000. Like, this is the biggest infrastructure project this country will have. If Sean Sweeney delivers this, it will have been money well spent.
We were talking earlier about Grok and the AI manipulation of images. Why not a law against possession, display, dissemination of images of identifiable persons that have been altered in a defamatory way? I know it would need precise teasing out, but less serious issues have been. Another, the CEO in the private sector is held accountable. That's why they get paid more. Semi-state CEOs, absolutely no accountability. Well, Kenny Jacobs might argue against that, because the spat that we're seeing in the DAA continues to rumble on. Danny, this is something you've been covering extensively in the Business Post. Mm. And there are extensive reports today about just how bitter and entrenched the battle over his position has become.
Yeah, so the reporting today is based on an affidavit that Kenny Jacobs has lodged in the High Court. So he's suing the DAA over the move to suspend him just before Christmas. And what is detailed in that affidavit of 63 or 64 pages is an incredible catalogue of a deteriorating relationship. So Kenny Jacobs was subject to two complaints by way of protected disclosure. He was exonerated by those. Other complaints have come into the mix, and the board, or certain elements as he describes it in the board, say, your face doesn't fit anymore, so therefore we're going to put you into a mediation process with the view to getting you out the door. And Kenny Jacobs in his affidavit claims that the chair, Basil Gagan, on two occasions said, I think you should resign and we'll pay you, we'll get you a good payoff and off you go. He obviously didn't want to do that, but they did get in mediation in September. They went to the point of agreeing a deal that he would leave in quarter one of this year with £1 million or there or thereabouts. That has obviously been blocked by Dara O'Brien. And now we're into this. This process has broken down. He was suspended amid fresh allegations. And, like, the kitchen sink is in there, Anton. Like, I mean, allegations of, be careful here, about sexism, misogyny, etc. That are now all denied.
Allegations being the critical word here. None of it.
All denied. And Kenny Jacobs, I suppose, thesis in his is that he's been essentially forced out the door. And that's obviously going to be subject to a High Court action that's going to, it's due for a hearing on Monday at 2 o'clock before Judge Brian Cregan. And we will see where it goes from there. But it is a highly now embittered corporate row. Probably the most extraordinary one I can remember, certainly in recent times.
And the most public.
It's certainly been, there's a significant level of detail being played in the public domain.
And speaking of which, I assume if you want to read more, the Business Post will be covering this extensively tomorrow.
On pages 8, 9, 10, 11.
Danny, thank you. Danny McConnell, editor with the Business Post, and thank you as well to Tabitha Monaghan, political reporter with the Irish Independent and Indo Daily presenter.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.